I'm constantly learning. I don't know it all. I don't claim to know it all, but I'm always trying to educate myself because I never want to be the fool, right?
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shump, and in this episode, we're speaking with internationally successful entrepreneur, author, and fellow podcaster, Reid Goossens. Originally a structural engineer from Queensland, today we'll learn about his journey to controlling $100 million worth of real estate investments in the United States. While Goossens originally lived on the Sunshine Coast of Queensland, he moved to the United States about 6.5 years ago, pursuing a different career that has changed his life.
I'm the co-founder of Wildhorn Capital, and I've got my own podcast called Investing in the US, an Aussie's Guide to US Real Estate. And I currently control about $100 million worth of multifamily, US multifamily, which I'm sure we'll get into what that means in the show. But my background is originally in structural engineering and went to the University of Queensland in Brisbane to get that degree. So I'm sure that's a bit of an elevator pitch, but that's my story in a nutshell.
Goossens briefly explains what his average day looks like.
I'm the co-founder of Wildhorn Capital, and I've got my own podcast called Investing in the US, an Aussie's Guide to US Real Estate. And I currently control about $100 million worth of multifamily, US multifamily, which I'm sure we'll get into what that means in the show. But my background is originally in structural engineering and went to the University of Queensland in Brisbane to get that degree. So I'm sure that's a bit of an elevator pitch, but that's my story in a nutshell.
Wow, that is a very, very lucrative offer. You know, when you can say that you can double people's money in 5 to 6 years, which you don't get in any other type of investments like that as easily, you know, and property being stable, I don't think it's a no-brainer to invest, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is. There's obviously a lot of things that have gone into it. And I'm sure we'll get into the show a little bit about what the differences are between Australia and the United States. And I will preface that I have not actually ever invested in Australia. So I can compare the differences of why they're different. But in terms of why America is you know, better or worse than Australia, I don't have much of a comment to say on the Aussie market just because I've never actually made any money in Australia. So coincidentally enough.
Growing up on the coast of Queensland, Goossens decided to move and work overseas after he finished university.
So I grew up on the Sunshine Coast in Noosa, or just inland of Noosa, a little place called Corroy, and went to Sunshine Beach State High, and my dad was the deputy principal of the school going through high school. So I had that sort of upbringing. Was hugely into show jumping and horses back in the day. That's what I did up on the coast. We had this sort of little hobby farm, and so jumped horses and, you know, was surfing and did all the awesome stuff that you get to do living on the Sunshine Coast, which is a pretty special part of the world. And then I graduated from high school and went to university and thought, you know, what the hell am I going to do? And I thought I was going to be a vet, but needed an OP1, and I didn't get an OP1, so I got an OP5, and went and studied civil engineering instead. And I really enjoyed that. And then, you know, moved to Brisbane and started a lived in Brizzy for obviously 4 or 5 years, and then got the bug and went, and as they say, pissed off overseas.
In case you're unsure, Goossens quickly explains what he means by OP1 and OP5.
When I was graduating, there's a rankings system, 1 to 25, 1 being the best, 25 obviously being not the best, and you would get ranked in you know, the 1 to 25. You know, top 1 to 5 was pretty good, 5 to 10, it's not too bad, and then anything really over 10, if you want to get into a decent university or decent university degree, you'd probably needed to get under 10 in order to pursue that, unless you'd have to go through some sort of other roles or back entrances into some different courses. So, OP5 got me pretty much a wide slew of options in terms of what I wanted to study, but it really was just vet or veterinary or civil engineering, and I chose civil engineering and I really, really enjoyed it.
As a part of his degree, Goossens worked for a company that eventually gave him work overseas in London after he graduated.
Part of the the program at University of Queensland was that you had to do a minimum of like 90 days as a quote unquote professional engineer before you graduated. So in all, you know, university holidays, I was getting jobs with different companies, just, you know, being essentially an intern, as they call it here in the States, but they don't really call it that in Australia. And it was better than pulling beers at a bar. So I was earning some decent money. And then in the final year of uni, you sort of worked part-time. And that company had a sister company in London. And I sort of said to them, look, I really, really want to go overseas. I'll figure out the visa as long as you can, you know, get me a job. And they got me a job with Mott MacDonald in London. And this was the beginning of 2008. And it was actually Mott MacDonald was the head structural civil engineering company on the 2012 Olympic Games. So I moved overseas and sort of fell arse over backwards into a pretty awesome role, helping, you know, the upgrade of the Paddington Station, which was obviously the iconic Paddington Station, in order, because that was going to be the first station that people would see coming off the London Underground from Heathrow.
After 12 months in London, Goossens caught the backpacking bug, eventually taking out work in South France.
And I actually moved to the south of France, where a good friend of mine had started working on the we call them the mega yachts, the super yachts in the south of France. And I did a week-long course and I joined him down there. And I started day working in the south of France and on Antibes. And there's a whole stories in and around that, mate, that I could get into for pretty much the whole 60 minutes. But I know we don't have a lot of time. But I did spend a good 12 months in the south of France. And I actually met my now wife, at the time was my girlfriend, backpacking on the beaches of San Sebastian in Spain. So, wow. So yeah, that's it's a bit of a brief story, but it's a pretty good one as well. So, yeah.
He explains more about his time in France, working on the yacht of a Russian billionaire.
I somehow kept my job and my visa was only for 12 months in the UK. So I was not ready to move back to Australia at that time. And I really wanted to just, you know, I think I was 22 or 23 at the time. So wanted to go continue traveling. And my buddy was like, yeah, look, mate, come and give this thing at being a deckhand on for the rich and mega wealthy in the south of France a crack. And I did. And I spent probably the first 3 or 4 months just day working in the south of France, you know, living in Nice and on Antibes, and getting, you know, walking the docks of a morning, asking for work, and then slowly building up a bit of a resume. And then I eventually got a job on my mate's yacht, who was I worked for a Russian billionaire, and it was incredible, you know, the most incredible experience of my entire life. I worked for the super wealthy, was, you know, living in it. Now mind you, to all your listeners out there, it wasn't that I was living the super wealthy life. I was one of the minions, slaving away, keeping clean surfaces clean, and really trying to make the boat shinier than the boat next door to you. And that was what I did for a good part of 6 months. And then I actually got the opportunity to travel on that yacht across the Atlantic Ocean to the Caribbean, where when it becomes winter in Europe, a lot of the yachts head to the Caribbean or Fort Lauderdale in the United States. And I was at sea for 10, 12 days, yeah. And it was just incredible.
Eventually, he decided he needed a change of pace.
And when we got to the other side, I worked on the yacht for a couple of weeks, probably about a month. And then I sort of said, look, mate, this is an awesome experience, but I did go to university and I did want to use my brain, and I just didn't want to, you know, scrub decks for the rest of my life, as much as it was an incredible experience. But and then I continued backpacking around America, and then eventually found my way back to Australia after about 2.5 years of being abroad.
Goossens looks back on the lifestyle of his boss during this time, and the experience he had working under someone so wealthy.
Yeah, apparently he's all self-made, and you know, he was just in that world, but being just, I think, more the experiences of living in that lifestyle, living in Monaco for a period of time, it was just like, wow, like, you know, you can't, and yet all the people who work on these yachts are down-to-earth Aussies and Kiwis and South Africans and Americans who just, you know, out to experience the world. And, you know, so it was very contrast of the workers versus the owners of the boat and the people who come in, you know, would holiday on these boats and charter these yachts. It was just, you know, just different worlds. So, really, I made some incredible lifelong friends out of that, you know, 12 months that I was doing that. And, you know, I still know people today that are still in the industry and loving it. So yeah.
What I wanted to know is, you came back to Australia after 2.5 years of traveling. What happened next?
Yeah, so obviously I'd fallen in love with an American girl. she coincidentally had applied for university in Australia to do a master's, and that was probably going to be, well, I got back in, what, 2000 and early 2010, and she was coming at the end of 2010, 2011. So I got back into the workforce as a civil engineer. It was pretty stark contrast to get back and living back in the world of corporate Australia. And it really sort of, I sort of had that really aha moment of like, oh my gosh, what the hell am I going to do for the rest of my life? And I didn't even know what the word entrepreneur was, but all I knew that I had more to give, and I really wanted someone to pay me just to live my life, right? And just travel the world. So I sort of started picking up books and understanding what the hell was I going to do with my life. I couldn't just sit in a cubicle for the next 40 years. And I stumbled across the book, like I'm sure a lot of you people have stumbled across the book, Rich Dad Poor Dad. And that was the book that sort of the coin dropped for me. It really outlined, okay, what I needed to be doing with my life and my energies in order to be, you know, transition from an employee to a self-employed to business owner to investor. And that is really where the journey started, all the way back in, you know, early 2010.
So with the concepts learned from Rich Dad Poor Dad, Goossens took these ideas and started to apply them very quickly.
Picked up that book. And from there, it was, you know, I was fortunate enough to work, and it's really when you take the blinkers off and you start seeing life in a different sphere, you know, if that makes sense. And that was, I was already working as a civil engineer with some big developers, and all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, how do they become developers? You know, what are they doing that I did wrong? And it was that book that sort of sparked that interest in me to go out and start learning as much as I could. And, you know, I think within, you know, a couple of months I was at, you know, starting to find, you know, local networking events that would help in terms of real estate education. And, you know, obviously Erica had moved to Australia at the time, and fast forward probably to the end of what must have been, what now, 2011, because she'd finished her uni stuff. I was pretty close to pulling a trigger on potentially a flip or, you know, a lease option in Australia. I don't know if lease options are still a thing. But I still had very much a bug to live overseas and live in New York City. And she'd obviously finished her master's, and we just said, screw it, let's move halfway across the world. And obviously she was back in the States, and there's an awesome visa for Australians that could mean that you could come and work here if you had a job offer. So we packed up our lives. I quit my well-paying civil engineering job and moved halfway across the world to say, let's give this a crack. And that was sort of just the decision again. As I said, I pissed off overseas again.
Second time around.
Second time around, right? Exactly.
Love it. Exactly. Goossens shared with us the people who influenced his decision to begin investing in property, particularly his parents.
My dad actually did inspire me to get into property. And going back to when I picked up that book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, I could have got into stock investing or business investing or real estate investing. And my dad was a school teacher, principal, as I mentioned earlier in the show. And, you know, he'd done well for himself, that he'd bought properties in you know, growing markets on the Sunshine Coast back in the mid 90s. And, you know, he'd doubled his money in 10 years. You know, property value had doubled in 10 years. You know, I remember him buying a piece of land in Coolum Beach up on the Sunshine Coast for $110,000 back in, you know, mid 90s, you know, and putting a house on it for like $200,000 or $300,000. And then, you know, in the mid 2000s, it was worth over $1 million. Like, it was stuff like that. He'd done very well for himself. And so, and he always said to me, you know, a fool and their money are easily parted. And that was always a saying that stuck with me, and something that, you know, rings true today. And it's like, you always got to be educated. You got to listen to podcasts like this. I'm constantly learning. I don't know it all. I don't claim to know it all, but I'm always trying to educate myself because I never want to be the fool, right? So, it was definitely, my parents brought me up with a good work ethic, but also, really, really blue collar work ethic, and they sort of instilled in me some really good financial just basics to go off and, you know, try and get my money working for me, essentially, at an early age.
The work ethic instilled in him by his parents, as well as his time working the docks in southern France, proved to be very useful for Goossens when he first arrived in New York City and started searching for a job.
So what I learned with the yachts was that, you know, I would wake up every morning at Sparrow's Fart and go walking the docks, and you'd approach every single super yacht that, hey, you got day work, no. And I got really, over a period of that time working on the yachts, rejection was a big thing, right? And I got used to rejection. So what I did was, when I moved to New York City, I was like, I printed out my portfolio, I just put on a suit. I literally was just walking into engineering joints. Like, I was just like, look, I'm here, I want a job, give me a job. And over a period of literally 3 weeks, I probably walked into 30 or 40 different engineering, you know, and I was very specific, mid-level companies, you know, 10 to 30 employees, because they wouldn't have the HR restriction, and I could just, you know, get to see someone. And within 3 weeks, I had like four or five interviews, and people were just blown away. Like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, he's walking in, and who's this Australian guy? Like, he's crazy. Like, but people dig it, right? And they were like, oh my gosh, he's got some backbone, and he wants to work. So I'm going to give him a job. And yeah, within 3 weeks, I had a job offer. I think it was in a month of being there, I had a job offer. But it was scary for a period of time, because I'd put, you know, we got a lease for 12 months. My girlfriend Erica at the time, my wife, but she had got a job pretty quickly. It was just very daunting. So I joined the local rugby club. I started, you know, I instantly had a bunch of mates, but it was sort of very hard. And it was probably ended up being 6 or 7 weeks before I sort of really got the job offer. It was probably 2 months in total, and I was sort of really cutting it close with the visa. So it was sort of, it all fell into place eventually, but it was really cut touch and go there for a little bit of time.
Coming up after the break, we'll explore how Goossens bought his first property in the USA.
Within the first year of being there, I had purchased my first property in upstate New York, and then 6 months after that, I purchased another one pretty quickly. So that's how I got my feet wet in the United States.
Some lessons he learnt.
You know, Australia doesn't really have ghettos compared to what you have here in the United States.
How he got inspired to build his property empire.
How did you close on 70 units, and how did you do that? It's in Canada, and what's happening? And he explained to me the power of OPM, other people's money.
All that and more coming up next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners. Are you interested in small investments with big profits? If the answer is yes, then register your interest at propertyinvestory.com. When you sign up, you'll receive deals at wholesale price, which I've negotiated with the vendor. These deals generate positive cash returns from day one, and I only send these out exclusively to my community. To find out more, visit propertyinvestory.com. Now back to the show. Within 2 weeks of arriving in New York, Goossens was attending real estate conventions and gaining vital insights into how to begin his property investment journey in the US.
Within 2 weeks, fresh off the boat, I was at my first, they call them REIA events here, Real Estate Investor Association groups, and they're all around the country, and then different cities have different ones. I happened to be at the New York REIA. And I was just so consumed, like just this incredible content that people were giving away for, you know, a small door fee. I would have had to pay a guru in Australia thousands and thousands of bucks, yet I was getting it for $20 or $30 at a local, you know, monthly chapter REIA event about, you know, lease options, flipping houses, finding the right market, understanding how to price out a deal. It was just incredible. And I was just reading and consuming as much as possible. And within, I think it was 7 or 8 months, I had purchased my, and then I combined that with the fact that the American market had so much lower barriers to entry compared to Australia. I'd chosen a submarket or market about 4 hours drive out of New York City, because obviously I couldn't afford New York. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I can pick up houses for $50,000. Like, this is crazy. Like, on paper, like, how does that even make sense? I could pick up a duplex for $58,000. I actually bought my first duplex for, I think it was $48,000 or $45,000. And yeah, I got my feet wet because I had to do it. And the fact was I couldn't get any leverage on that because I was fresh off the boat. I didn't have any credit. I had to figure out what the hell credit was. And that was, you know, essentially a way that the banks say, well, hey, you know, we think we can lend to you because you've got this really good credit score, but you've got to build that up over a period of time. So I had a bit of money I had saved in the bank. Remember, I was going to do something in Australia, but I said instead I moved to America. And from that, I found a market that I was going to invest in. It was a 4-hour drive away. Nothing crazy in terms of the market. It was just I had to get started, right? There was, you know, that old saying, you don't get ripped by reading about going to the gym. You got to go to the gym, right? So, you know, it was sort of that sort of analysis paralysis, and within I think was in, you know, within the first year of being there, I had purchased my first property in upstate New York, and then 6 months after that, I purchased another one. Pretty quickly. So that's how I got my feet wet in the United States.
While they generate immediate positive cash flow, there were still lessons to be learned from these initial investments.
It was positive cash flow from day one, but I, you know, definitely learned some lessons about what's called Section 8. And, you know, we think, you know, Australia doesn't really have ghettos compared to what you have here in the United States, but I was definitely in one of them. And that's why the houses were so cheap. But I didn't know that at the time, right? And I had to, you know, I learned some few things. On the first 6 months, it was going really, really well. But then, you know, these Section 8 tenants, they're not the most, you know, if you think you can, you know, it's a $50,000 property and I'm renting, you know, a unit out first, call it $700 a month, I'm not getting the most desirable tenants. So I learned pretty quickly that I probably needed to be in a little bit nicer market, pay a little bit more for the properties in order to not have the headaches and the turnover that I had. And every time a tenant would leave, I'd trash the place and I'd spend another $2,000 or $3,000, you know, putting into it to try and, you know, make it whole again. So definitely learned a lot. And through that experience, I was able to, you know, roll some capital into more deals. And I actually flipped a few houses in Philadelphia. It was another good entry, low barriers to entry in that market. And that sort of really got me going. And I'm sure we'll talk about the story about how I got into what I'm doing now. But that was really the start of it all, and got my feet wet. Within 12 to 18 months, I probably had three or four little properties that were going okay. You know, I definitely had not quit my day job at that stage, but was well on the way to doing something.
But this wasn't the only problem he faced on his path of investment. Goossens describes one of the houses he intended to flip in Philadelphia as his worst investment.
The biggest lesson I learned on that deal was that it just didn't have enough what's called after repair value, ARV, and it was just there was not enough meat on the bone to do what I needed to do what I wanted to do. And essentially, we bought a row house, me and my business partner. Or at the time, he was a business partner, no longer a business partner. We partnered up and we bought a little row house. And when I say row houses, it's these sort of older houses. Think of Paddington in Sydney, you know, where the houses they're separated by a party wall. There's a wall that they have a common wall. So in Philadelphia and on the East Coast, it's very traditionally brown. They call them brownstones in America. Very, very quaint looking things. And in Philadelphia, it's quite reasonable barriers to entry because Philly is slowly gentrifying. But with that house, the houses around it, or the house next door, I should say, it was a 3-story, and ours was only a 2-story. And I thought, well, here we go. We could put a third floor on this, thinking, okay, well, we're going to be able to spend, you know, $150,000, $200,000 to put a third floor on it with a roof deck and do the remaining of the house and flip it, and we'll sell it for maybe $400,000. We bought the house for $110,000. It ended up being a nightmare. We ended up spending well over $250,000. We had to fire the general contractor. He was stealing stuff from our site. It was just a whole nightmare. And it ended up taking well over 18 months to do. We didn't have sign off from HVAC and electrical from the local city, you know, so we had to sort of rip open walls again and show them the new plumbing. And it just all poor management, a little bit too out of my skis with the with just trying to think I could get the proper ARV at the end of the deal. So that was a lot of lessons I learned on that deal. And I didn't I didn't personally lose my shirt, but I had some friends, and family involved in the deal. Actually, my dad and I, you know, first time, quote unquote, raising money. But I promised my dad a certain return, and I made good on it. So I gave him his return, and I obviously came out of pocket and lost money on the deal. But I got out of it with my shirt on, and it was definitely a lesson learned that I would never do again.
Goossens discusses exactly what triggered his transition from individual property investor to entrepreneur and multi-million dollar business owner, namely through the guidance of an old friend and the use of a mentor.
A friend of mine came down from 2013, I should say, 2013. A friend of mine came down from Canada, and we'd actually studied together in University of Queensland. And he was the first, you know, guy I met the first day at college, at Union College at UQ. And he came down to New York, and we went out for some drinks, and you know, I was sort of boasting. I was like, "Oh mate, I got these three little properties, and I'm killing it, and blah blah blah." And I think I'm looking at doing some flips in Philadelphia, blah blah blah. And he's like, "Look, that is incredible, man. Like, well done, you know." And then all of a sudden, he says, "I just closed on a 70 unit." And I was like, "What the hell? How did you close on 70 units? And how did you do that? It's in Canada. And what's happening?" And he explained to me the power of OPM, other people's money. And he had got a mentor, and he was able to go and raise a bit of money through friends and family for a down payment on a commercial asset in Canada. And through commercial financing world, he was able to go and purchase this deal with a lender carryback financing. So it was just incredible to me that he was able to do that. And then he sort of explained to me further the power of, you know, cap rates and net operating income. And the strategies that I was doing on my smaller properties was that I'd go in, I'd buy these houses, I would put about $5,000 into them, maybe $3,000 or $4,000 into them, put new, you know, flooring, lick of paint, and I'll be able to charge, you know, $100-$150 more a month. And that wouldn't necessarily raise the value of the property because it was still a class as a residential on my small duplexes. But he was doing the same thing, but on 70 units. And when you increase the net operating income of your asset by, you know, increasing $100 over 70 units, that increases the value substantially. And that's why North America, banks view multifamily real estate apartments as businesses. And so they value them on cap rate, and cap rate is equal to the net operating income divided by the value. So if you can increase the NOI, you can increase the value. So it was just same principles, but just on a larger scale. And so what I did was he really inspired me to go and take more action and really get a mentor. And because I couldn't do what he was doing, and he couldn't have done what he was doing without getting that mentor and riding on the coattails of that mentor. You know, credibility is huge, and I'd only done a handful of small little houses. So I'm skipping a lot of details, but essentially that is how I got started. And I went and found a mentor, and through that mentor, I was able to build credibility, build a brand, was able to raise money on his deals. And through doing a number of deals with him, I was able to just branch off on my own and do my own deals. So that's in a nutshell how I got started, five and a half years ago.
Goossens describes how the new forms of investments are more favorable than traditional stock market investments, and how this kickstarted his new career.
People are becoming more smarter with their money. They're controlling, you know, in Australia, you can control your super funds. In America, it's called IRAs, self-directed IRAs. It's a retirement fund. So there's a lot more people looking for different ways because they're sick of the stock market. They want their money invested in a hard asset because of all the taxable benefits that you have. Combine that with appreciation, forced appreciation, which is what we're calling that when we go in and we do the units up and we increase the value. So we increase the rent, and that increases the value. There's also obviously the cash flow aspect, and then there's the amortization that the tenants are paying down your loan. So there's a lot of positives, as you know, I'm sure you've talked a lot about on your show, but there's a lot of people out there looking for alternative investments and not having to do in the traditional, give your money to a stock broker and some guy's going to put your money. You're kind of gambling in the stock market. So through that, there's definitely a network of people interested in investing in multifamily commercial assets. And through proper branding, through education, through creating pitch decks, I was able to raise a small amount of money over a couple of deals, and that was able to kickstart my career in terms of doing larger and larger deals.
Finally, Gustin reevaluates the defining moment that changed his career trajectory.
There's no other time we're clicking, right? Again, I think it's the aha moment where I had that meeting with my mate Scott from Canada, and he was just explaining to me the power of commercial real estate. And that was really okay, I get it. I'm doing it on this small scale. I need to be doing it on this big scale, because, you know, doing it on a duplex is not really moving the needle. But doing it on 70 or 100 or 200 units, that's like really powerfully moving the needle. So, you know, increasing on a 10 cap, say 10 cap rate, if you increase the dollar, you increase the NOI by $1, you're increasing the value of the property by 10 bucks. So that is just, you know, how incredibly powerful this world is of commercial real estate, and why a lot of, you know, big developers get into commercial, because it's just so much more scale.
Yeah,
so,
leverage, you know, that is amazing.
Exactly.
Tune in to a future episode where we'll continue Reid Goossens' investment journey by exploring his strategies, such as why and how he sourced his mentor.
I knew I had to get a coach, a mentor. You know, all good sports teams have one. You need, I sort of had done a few little deals here and there, but hadn't really achieved that financial freedom.
What types of investments he looks for?
We look to buy 1980s, 1990s, early 2000 built assets. We don't look to buy brand new Class A buildings. We look for what's called Class B, and we look to go for that value add.
How his business structure works?
We would raise that down payment from our investors, and we would obviously chip in some money as well.
All that and more in a future episode of Property Invest Story. Also, are you interested in small investments with big profits? If the answer is yes, simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to register your interest. When you sign up, you'll receive deals at wholesale price, which I've negotiated with the vendor. These deals generate positive cash returns from day one, and I only send these out exclusively to my community. To find out more, text me your email address on 0499881040. Thanks for listening.